Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Which 1958 film should have been called Acrophobia? The answer to that at the end of the show. My name's Tom Scott, and this is Lateral. In my secret lab each night, I've been perfecting the formula for the panel show lineup, and I finally cracked it. Let me introduce you to the greatest assembly of brains since Frankenstein's monster. We start with someone from Tested, formerly of Mythbusters. How do you want to be introduced, Mr. Adam Savage?
Maker, permission machine, science communicator.
That is a really good lineup. Thank you for being part of the show. How are you doing? How is stuff out at the workshop?
Stuff at the workshop could not be better. The Tested team is firing on all cylinders. We have just had a really, really great year, and it has been a real delight.
Can you give us a hint what you're working on? Like, it's going to be a month or two before this comes out. What's in the works for you at the moment?
Well, currently, I have just received the sort of most important model-making racks in history for me. And that will be a whole set of videos around that. These were 50 years old, and they're part of a storied franchise. And I've just received them and have to integrate them into the shop. And on the side, I'm also repeatedly replicating the British crown jewels for some reason because I can't stop.
For a heist. That must be
Are
for a heist.
Are you going to participate in a heist? It's got to be a heist.
I find them both compelling and appalling at the same time, and that's my favorite kind of object.
I don't know. This sounds like the beginning of an Ocean's 11.
Next up, we have podcaster, writer, saxophonist, and host of Taboo Science, Ashley Hamer.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, I can't really ask you how the workshop's going, but how is everything you're working on at the moment going?
It's going great. I'm working on a new season of Taboo Science. Taboo Science basically examines different taboos through a scientific lens. So things like cannibalism, necrophilia, tamer stuff like obesity and asexuality was one of the most popular episodes. But I'm working on a themed season for season four, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, very best of luck on the show today. Our last member of the trio, of the three new players that we have for this episode, we have from, well, I can say it now, from Dropout. Rather than College Humor, the name has changed. Congratulations on that. We have Sam Reich. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thank you so much for having me. Really excited and unqualified to be here today.
No, I said before recording that I'm worried about the three minds we have here today. I am just a little bit concerned that all these questions just get blasted through immediately. As we record this, you have just dropped the trailer for Very Important People.
This is true. We're in a development sprint. We've got all sorts of exciting stuff coming to drop out in the next 6 to 8 months. New shows. If you're a subscriber, it's going to be a wonderful, wild time. And if you're not, what are you doing?
That is the most effective plug we've had in the intros. Well done. Well, I'm sure you all have the personal chemistry needed to combat today's questions, which, as always, are far from elementary. I didn't write that. The first one is this. Susan invited two men to her house. They weren't entertainers, yet one wore roller skates while the other wore stilts. What were they doing? I'll say that again. Susan invited two men to her house. They weren't entertainers, yet one wore roller skates while the other wore stilts. What were they doing?
There's a big block of ice in the middle of the room, and when it melts, no. The doctor was the boy's mother.
Yeah, and they cooked the murder weapon afterwards, yeah.
My first thought is that they're going to repair something. Like, one of them has to get way up high, and one of them has to move really fast.
Well, and I can tell you, having been someone who's repaired stuff up high, I have used stilts in a non-entertainment fashion. And the stilts that I use that way are painter's stilts,
yes,
which I have also actually worn for entertainment purposes. I've worn them in costumes so that I could
yes.
get an extra couple of feet.
Is there a difference between like normal stilts and painter's stilts?
Circus stilts tend to be single poles strapped to your calf. And so that's a balancing act. And painter's stilts tend to actually have a full foot platform that actually moves with the foot so that a non-trained circus performer can actually put them on their legs and walk around safely.
That's also the difference between a regular unicycle and a painter's unicycle. They just really careful.
As someone who rides unicycles, that landed. I love it.
Of course I was in the juggling society when I was at university. Look at me. There's just an increasingly obscure series of wheeled contraptions arrived. Like, someone got good at the unicycle, so then they got good at the unicycle but without anything to sit on. And then they got good at what they called the impossible wheel, which was just a wheel with two pegs sticking out of it instead of pedals. And
At
some point, someone was able to get that around the hall.
I love that there's still innovation going on in the circus game. That, like, you know, there's
one of my most foundational memories was being 15 and going to the International Jugglers Convention because it was in the town next to mine. This is like 1983. And the Swedish unicycling team did not get to perform their act on stage because they had like booked something right after and we went too long. So the Swedish unicycling team said, meet us in the gym. And we went to the gym and they did their routine on the bleachers.
Whoa.
Bouncing up and down the bleacher stairs. They did their stage routine.
You have correctly identified the painter. That is absolutely right. It is a way that painters get stuff up high. That bit's right. What about the roller skates?
Roller skates? Like the person is wearing roller skates.
Does it measure if something's uneven? Like, you know, you roll a marble and the floor tilts a little?
He's also said skates, but I'm not sure he said that they're on feet.
I said wore roller skates.
War roller skates. Okay, so we do, because I was thinking of a mechanic's creeper, right? Like the tiny dolly a mechanic lies flat on their back on to go underneath a car, but that's clearly
I did not,
not
know that was called a creeper.
Maybe it's no longer called a creeper.
There's only, when I think about someone wearing roller skates in a utilitarian way, where my mind immediately goes is like they're the dolly somehow. Do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. it was important for something to be on wheels to move about.
Yes.
The only other cartoonish situation that comes to mind is that the paint is somehow on the roller skates, which makes no sense. I think my brain is going Looney Tunes.
Oh no, but that sounds like I would love to test that out. That sounds like a fun day.
Down in my notes, it says this is a personal anecdote. This is not some ephemeral thing that happened. This is someone our question writer knows actually had a builder turn up with roller skates to do this.
Oh, wow. Then... Actually, I would tend to drift back towards painting and say that on roller skates, you could have a really good way of laying down the tape on a long wall, for instance.
Or even that's doing really a really good. Straight line of paint mm-hmm. without the tape. Mm-hmm. I mean, tape or paint.
Yeah, I'm going to give you that. That's close enough. It is more so plastering and things like that to get a consistent, smooth surface at a consistent speed. But yeah, the roller skates are there because it's smoother than walking.
Wait, but how do they combine with the stilts? Are they on...
They are not both wearing the same things, although I would pay to see that. Like that is a circus trick.
That's an insurance issue at that point.
It is.
The entire juggling convention is an insurance issue. I know the people who had to sort the insurance for the British one of that once. It's a lot.
Oh my goodness.
If two painters showed up to my home, one in roller skates and the other on stilts, I'd be like, it's like, yeah, you do my roof with the help of an elephant.
Each of our guests has brought a question along with them. Sam, we're going to start with you.
Incredible. Role as host, how I feel most natural. Your question is, in a suburban Berlin park, why do people repeatedly vandalize an unremarkable statue of a jaguar every time it's restored. Again, in a suburban Berlin park, why do people repeatedly vandalize an unremarkable statue of a jaguar every time it's restored?
I just want to say I really appreciate the California pronunciation of jaguar.
I really appreciate the Californian pronunciation of jaguar. So just solid work all around.
Something for everybody.
My first thought went to the statue in Glasgow. And I cannot remember which statue it is. It's fairly near the city center, which always has a traffic cone on its head. At some point, it's a guy on a horse in Glasgow. And any time that traffic cone is removed, we don't know who puts it up. It's whichever drunk person happens to come by next. But there is consistently a traffic cone on the head. But the reason behind that is it's funny. As far as I know, there's no reason behind that other than it's funny. Oh, thank you, producer David. It's the Duke of Wellington statue.
Is it sports related? I know. I mean, I lived in Chicago for 10 years. All of the statues have different sports hats. Gosh, hats.
That's just sure.
I watch sports. They've got helmets. They've got jerseys on. Is it like that?
Wait, do they dress up the statues for sports events?
Oh, yeah. If you go into the Field Museum, you'll see like some of the dinosaurs are wearing like Bulls jerseys and things. Yeah.
As a comedian, I just can't tell you how. I just can't let you get away with sports hats. That's the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
And also, like, clearly they're big fans of Jacksonville. So it's the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, out in Berlin, sure. They love it. Yeah.
I will say Tom is correct in the sense that the reason for this being vandalized is probably that it's funny, at least in part.
Because I was thinking it was a political thing at first, and then I was thinking of the bull down at Wall Street, but the only vandalism it suffers is it's got really shiny balls.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of statues like that in the world.
Yeah. It's the statue equivalent of a desire path, is what it is. Right.
This is a Berlin Park, and it's a statue of a jaguar. So it's not...
Yes.
Okay.
Of a big cat, which could be another way in here to a solution, okay. Is thinking about that species and, you know, what family of cat it belongs to.
I'm trying to think of anything to do with Berlin or landmarks. Like, the only things I know in Berlin are Hitler's big lump of concrete, which I've never done a video on because it's just a big lump of concrete. there's a story there. They built it as testing for something and no one can knock it down because it's literally just an enormous building-sized solid lump of concrete. And the other thing is Berlin Airport, which is just very late and not that good. But like, none of that has anything to do with... Like, why would you protest?
I'm taking all of my cues from you here, Tom, in terms of hints and how to go about them. You'd be specifically wrong to look at Berlin for your reason why. In fact, you would sooner look to Hollywood.
Oh, this is someone who hosts a game show or two.
To Hollywood. It gets, does it get a little kitty collar? Does someone keep buying it, a little diamond collar?
It does not wear anything.
Oh.
I mean, I'm thinking of the MGM lion. I don't know why. There's nothing else there. I just said a word.
Yeah.
Great start.
Okay.
But no, you think less industry and more just, you know, properties.
Is this thing walking? Is it rearing up or something like that?
Is it the Pink Panther?
It is the Pink Panther!
Yes!
Amazing!
Oh my God, Ashley! From like 2 to 10.
I got it!
That's crazy.
Do they paint it pink repeatedly?
They paint it pink repeatedly, and every time it's set back to normal, someone new comes along and makes it pink again.
I love that.
Oh my God. My question now is it that special paint that was formulated to not be sold to the guy who's got the license to use Vanta Black.
I filmed with the guy and all his colors. It's a brilliant scheme. He's a great publicist for the pigments he makes, which is, I think, how he funds all the art. Like, he's got a great pigment shop. It's wonderful. And just getting into an art beef with Anish Kapoor and banning specifically that one guy from buying his paint is just wonderful.
I'm so here for that kind of beef.
Yeah.
The sculpture is by Henrik Drake. It's called Jaguar. The jaguar is a type of panther. And locals keep painting it pink no matter how many times it's reset to black.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Thank you to an anonymous listener for this question. In 1959, the US Post Office Department entered into a government collaboration to deliver mail from an isolated office 100 miles away. This service could deliver 3,000 letters in 22 minutes. What method was used? And one more time, in 1959, the US Post Office Department entered into a government collaboration to deliver mail from an isolated office 100 miles away. This service could deliver 3,000 letters in 22 minutes. What method was used?
Santa Claus.
Immediately what I thought.
I think of one government department helping another government department, and I have this overarching suspicion that it's a proof of concept.
Yes, sure. And I suspect, Adam, you might know this one if you're already thinking.
I don't actually off the top of my head. No, I just think about when different departments collaborate, it's usually because one wants to make a point.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
It's got to be the military, right?
100%. Where my mind immediately goes is like a giant Dumbo drop of letters, like that amount of letters in such a short amount of time.
I was thinking those like vacuum tubes that you see in banks, just like.
Ooh.
There's apparently still a network of those in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, they're not in use anymore. There's one in Prague that's also out of service. I visited one once in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is used for sending small samples of radioactive stuff from a particle accelerator to a hospital, like 2-3 kilometers away. They use it for medical imaging. Like that's how you use some medical imaging stuff. You use short-lived radioactive isotopes. So they either have to put it in a van and truck it 20 minutes down the road, or put it in a sample tube and whoop, boom, all the way down, 2.5 minutes. It's amazing.
Good sound effect.
Thank you. I was proud of that sound effect.
Is it like a underwater torpedo kind of delivery service? I'm thinking about getting something to a remote location.
You are getting very close very quickly here. You're right, it's the military. 100% spot on there, Ashley. And you've run through most of it here.
Is it, off of Adam, is it something to do with like attaching communication to like a weapon? Like, is it, you know, we put a letter to mom on a bomb.
Yes, this is the military sees everything as a hammer. The military is a hammer and everything is a nail. So all they know how to do is shoot stuff. So clearly they've figured out how to shoot communications.
Yes.
What?
You'll get your letter. You won't survive to read it.
Exactly. Hold on. Let me pull your Christmas card out of my chest.
This service could deliver 3,000 letters in 22 minutes over 100 miles.
An hour.
No. 100 miles in 22 minutes.
In 22 minutes.
So I'm actually going to tell you, given stuff we did on Mythbusters, that to travel 100 miles... it's probably went into the high into the atmosphere to make that parabolic arc.
Right.
This is rocket mail. This is putting mail inside a missile as an attempt to deliver. Where was the post office? Because you, you nearly said this, Adam. You kind of joked about this and you were nearly there.
Oh, is it like the Bering Strait? Is it like...
Not exactly the Bering Strait, but you're right that it was not launched from land.
Oh, wow. Oh.
From the Navy?
From the Navy. To the Navy as well, actually. The missile successfully landed at a Navy station in Maryport, Florida. So I feel like successfully landed is doing a lot of work there.
I was about to say, when you say missile successfully landed,
yes.
does that mean people successfully shot at?
Yeah.
Wait, how many letters are we talking? Wait, this is all the letters go at the same time, right? We're not distributing them.
3,000 letters, one missile, 8th of June, 1959, including a letter from President Eisenhower. So the only piece of this puzzle we're missing is where was the post office?
Okay, so 100 miles from Florida.
100 miles from
and
Florida.
And probably underwater.
Underwater.
But where?
Underwater is the correct thing there.
That's submarine.
From a sub.
They designated the submarine a post office and launched 3,000 letters in one missile at a Navy base. And it did work. It actually technically did work. Britain had some experiments with rocket mail as well. There was a brief fad for it that unfortunately never took off, because then we got to the 1960s and launching missiles became a lot more of a problem than it might otherwise have been.
Now, I haven't been around very long, but that has got to be the coolest post office to ever exist.
But the post office has always been way out at the vanguard of the explored. So I actually think that cool post offices is a crowded field with some research.
I mean, that's also a pretty good documentary series if anyone wants to do that as a YouTube series or something. Like, track down the old post office. Track down the folks who take post on mule down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
I mean, that's the thing, is that there's exploring the thing for the first time. And then there's the first time you need to actually get a letter there. That speaks to a certain level of establishment.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yes, 1959, the U.S. Post Office Department fired mail in a missile. Ashley, over to you for the next question.
This question has been sent in by Andy Blackett. On the 13th of October, 2022, Tom Hollins completed a marathon run in 112 hours, 5 minutes. He had no physical disadvantages, nor did he carry or wear anything that would slow him down. Yet, his achievement was widely celebrated. Why? And I will read that again. On the 13th of October, 2022, Tom Hollins completed a marathon run in 112 hours, 5 minutes. He had no physical disadvantages, nor did he carry or wear anything that would slow him down. Yet his achievement was widely celebrated. Why?
Because Tom Holland is Spider-Man.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You said Tom Holland, and then there was an S on the end of it. I think there was an S
I'm sorry, Tom Hollins. Hollins.
Well, that's disappointing.
Maybe that's why. I just had Spider-Man on the brain.
So he had no physical infirmity, so we're not talking about someone who pushed a wheelchair or the length of a marathon.
Right.
He was not carrying anything.
Right. 100 hours is a long time.
I feel like I could do a marathon in 100
it's
hours.
It's 50 times the length of time it should take, right? Yeah. 40
times. I think that it's meaningfully slower than walking a marathon.
Yeah, because your walking speed's about 3 or 4 miles an hour. So even, you know, 26 miles and a bit, that's still going to be a day.
Yeah, it's a quarter of a mile per hour.
Did something interrupt him? Like, did he get 2 miles into the course, have a medical emergency, get shipped to hospital, come back later, and just start running again? And just, yeah, technically it worked.
So he did this, all of this was on purpose, and it did involve running a lot more than 26 miles.
Oh, okay.
He maybe made it to the end of the marathon, turned back before crossing the finish line, and did it all over again?
He's a mathematician, and he's actually doing a Zeno's paradox thing where he does half a marathon, and then quarter marathon, and then an eighth of a marathon, and then And eventually...
diminishing returns.
Eventually, he actually found the point where it got close enough for all practical purposes.
And Matt Parker went there.
Yeah,
and-
yeah, absolutely.
Does it have anything to do with him almost finishing and then not?
No.
Oh, was he using his feet?
He was.
Okay.
He's inside a giant Zorb ball, and it just keeps spinning around as he goes.
That's great, too.
Was he dancing? Was he flossing all the way to the finish line?
He was running.
We're meant to be discussing this. We're just throwing out bizarre ways you get terrible world records.
So he was in... When you say he was running, were his limbs being moved by other people?
No.
In a sort of a bad improv exercise, kind of.
You said he managed way more than 26 miles. So he's just taken a really inefficient route for some reason. Why in my head is this like the New York Marathon? And he's gone down all the city blocks on the way side to side to the marathon point. But
did he take an unusual route?
Yes. I would say the word inefficient that Tom used is a really good one.
Okay.
So some specific kind of inefficiency related to the route of the marathon.
What was he in a giant hamster wheel?
Adam's just going
I can't
back.
Not think of big emotions.
Right. There's got to be a reason behind it as well. There's got to be something.
For sure,
doing.
For sure.
Did he have a GPS tracker on and he's just drawing out the word marathon in enormous letters Ooh. With the route he's taking?
I love that, but no, that's not it.
Oh.
Does the location of the marathon matter?
Yeah, I thought it was New York, and I don't know why I thought that.
No, it's not New York. And the location does matter. You wouldn't be able to do this everywhere.
Boston?
It doesn't really matter. Like, the city does, or the...
Doesn't matter. Got it.
Yeah, it just, the type of place it is matters.
Does it have anything to do with landmarks?
Yeah.
Oh, did he take the standard marathon route, or did he run there like underwater?
No, it was all on land.
This is fascinating.
Only one component of his run counted towards the total. And I would think about, you were saying you had a GPS watch. I know I use a GPS watch. It'll give you a lot of different stats about what your run entailed. I would think about those other stats.
Oh, did he try to do it without his like heart rate going over a certain amount or something like
that?
No.
Oh,
that's a good question though.
It's going to give you speed, blood oxygen.
Was he doing burpees? Was he like taking a step and then going down and doing a push-up and back
so
up?
Painful.
Oh God.
So painful.
He was on the International Space Station and he had to just keep running until the orbit took him over the exact point of... Oh, this is infuriating. We've got so many good ideas for bad challenges. And
so think about what kind of terrain this would entail. I mean, think of different kinds of terrain you could run a marathon on.
It's ice and his feet just kept slipping. It's sand and his feet just keep slipping.
Sand is good.
Sand, pavement.
We talked about doing burpees and how painful that would be. This way of running a marathon is incredibly painful.
Hock holes.
No.
Barefoot.
No. It is painful and it would make you run for more than 26 miles.
I'm running in circles, just occurred to me, but that doesn't track. Not on his hands. He's using his feet. We've established that.
How is the 26 miles measured?
Oh my God, no. He didn't go the long way round.
Around the world?
Around the world. That he started at the start point, he ended at the end point, but he went the entire circumference of the world around.
No.
Oh, I thought I had that. I thought
that was really
that.
Good.
That's
you
so
you
cool.
had me. I was in.
Oh.
Okay, so let me, I'm gonna brag for a second. I have run many marathons, and some marathons are harder than others. What would that reason be? Why are they hard? Why are
because
some?
It's
steep.
It's 26 miles vertical. He had to go up and down and up and down to cover 26 vertical miles.
Tom got it. It was measured vertically.
Crazy. Oh my Lord.
We got there.
We literally, we guessed giant hamster wheel before we guessed the y-axis.
Z, the Z axis.
Z axis. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So Tom Hollins ran over 193 miles so he could complete a vertical marathon, i.e., a change in elevation of 26 miles, 385 yards. Both the uphill and downhill leg counts, but only the vertical distance, like Tom said. To achieve this, he ran up Pendle Hill in Lancashire, England, probably said that wrong, 223 times in a row. So he ran up the same hill more than 200 Whoa. Times. This is the equivalent vertical distance of 4.75 times the height of Mount Everest. He only allowed himself a couple of hours of sleep after each Everest. It's thought that this was the first time someone had achieved a quad Everest distance in a running session. More manageable vertical kilometer races are a popular format of running race. So yeah, I looked this guy up. He's a big like trail runner, kind of like mountain runner. He loves just running up things. So he did this.
Wow.
Ultra marathon runners are
they're truly.
Our next question comes from A2 Mackinnon. Thank you very much. To become one of the best at what he did, Simo ate snow before doing his job. What was Simo famous for? I'll say that again. To become one of the best at what he did, Simo ate snow before doing his job. What was Simo famous for?
Is Simo a dog?
I'm so stupid. But you said, what is he famous for? I said, eating snow. I'm just taking this at face value, Tom. I'm working with what you're giving me.
I mean, it is technically a correct answer to the question. It is not quite what I'm looking for. Certainly not what he's most famous for.
I'm wondering if Simo is a sommelier and this is how they cleanse their palate before tasting wine.
I love that. It's a little bit of sorbet.
It is very rare that I get to say to all three guests, no. Like, I realize I'm supposed to yes and at this point. But once we get the full strikeout on the initial guesses.
I really thought Ashley had something.
Yeah. I was thinking sled dog all the way. Okay.
Is it like, does Simo operate a snowplow? And this is like the gladiator from Gladiator. He's got to smell the dirt before he goes to battle. He's got to eat the snow before he plows it.
Truly, truly the last question has put me in the headspace of just arbitrary human accomplishment to the point where it's like, there could be any reason for this.
There is a logical progression for this one. This is something that there's a few jumps to make, but might be good to think about reasons.
Got it.
Does he eat something competitively?
No. The snow is the only eating part here.
Only eating part. Okay. So he doesn't eat hot peppers or anything like that. All right.
The only logical reason that occurs to me to eat snow is for lack of another water source. That right, like folks in the like a camping situation or an Arctic situation, a survival situation.
I will unfortunately tell you that the very first note on my script here is he gained no nutritional or hydration benefit from the snow.
And okay. Actually, in point of fact, I was going to go on and say that eating snow is a terrible way to get water. If you're
really
in need of water, it's better than nothing, but it's hard to get enough water from eating snow if you're dehydrated.
Honestly, thank goodness Adam is here. I just right. encouraged a bunch of kids to eat snow and you were there to undo my mistake.
So what other reasons might there be?
I mean, information from the eating of the snow could be its temperature, its consistency, its softness. So the texture of the snow or the taste of it could affect the job that Simo is about to do. They could be a skier.
He needs to tell the weather somehow or like.
Oh, like information pressure. About the. Yeah. About the content itself.
Yeah.
I mean, we're. Yeah, I mean, our reasons why are actually few because it's either for some scientific, if it's not to do with gaining any nutritional value, it's not a survival situation.
And it's not getting any information either. Although you could argue this was a survival situation, just not in the way you're thinking.
Oh, interesting. Not to get information means flavor? For pure pleasure,
No information and no nutritional value and no hydration.
So it's a ritual then. I would assume then if it's no information, then it is ritualistic behavior. Or I feel like that leap could be made.
He's not taking in information, but he's making sure he's not giving it out either.
This is, and again, I think my comedy mind is going immediately to potty humor, but is there something to do with not the ingestion of the snow, but what comes out the other end that's significant?
Mm.
This is a rhetorical question, Tom. I can see you wanting to steer me in.
The thing is, Sam, it's not completely wrong. The wrong words in that are the other end.
The snow, it's something to do with, he's building a snowman inside his body.
It's more to do with what comes out.
But he said it might be considered a survival circumstance under a certain frame of reference.
Simo is very famous in Finland, by the way, where he's from. This is a very famous person in Finland's modern history, reasonably modern history.
It's like he's trying to go through the wilderness untracked, and he's not eating his pea snow, is he? That'd be awful.
Oh, you were so good until you went off with the whole pea snow thing there. Okay. Undetected.
Woman after my own heart, Ashley.
Undetected is a very key word here.
Okay. He wants to be undetected, but why? And what does eating snow do? Mm-hmm.
It's got to be something to do with cooling himself down, right?
Yes.
Like he ate, first of all, the big question here is obviously, who is Simo?
But to not show up on a thermal imaging camera.
Adam, you are very close now. It's a little too early for thermal imaging cameras. This is 1939 to 1940, but very much to do with cooling down.
So Simo is absolutely a military someone.
Yes. Hence survival situation.
And cooling themselves down so as to not be detectable, what could they detect him?
Cooling down his mouth.
Cool down his...
When I said what comes out.
Smoke.
Smoke, vapor in the snow. Spot on.
Vapor.
So why
the
is...
The snow in his mouth keeps the vapor from coming out of his mouth. Is he a sniper?
He is a sniper. He is.
Wow.
Oh my God.
He is Simo Hauhe. He was the Finnish sniper known as the White Death in Finland. He is famous in Finland to this day for being one of the deadliest snipers ever recorded from the Winter War between Russia and Finland. And he would camp out, keep the snow in his mouth or eat the snow, and there would not be vapor giving his position away to the enemy.
That border in Finland has yielded some hardcore humans.
Yes, it has. Adam, the next question is yours whenever you're ready.
All right, here we go. Tennessee's tourism department installed telescopic viewfinders at several vistas around the state. An award-winning video shows people moved to tears after looking through these telescopic viewfinders. What caused this joyous reaction? Tennessee's tourism department installed telescopic viewfinders at several vistas around the state, and an award-winning video shows people moved to tears after looking through them. What caused this joyous reaction? These tears of joy, if you will.
The Tennessee Grand Canyon. It's staggering. It's just a thing unlike anywhere else in the world. There is actually a Pennsylvania Grand Canyon, and it is unimpressive.
it defies geologic anything.
Actually, that there even
is a canyon.
The Pennsylvania Grand Canyon, which I think is a real thing. There's certainly a state up there with that. It's not unimpressive. It's just they've sold it as the Grand Canyon, which it is not.
One of my key memories from childhood is a Flintstones episode where they visit the Grand Canyon on vacation and it's just a little stream. Like, I remember my brain being like, wait a minute.
Okay.
I'm just thinking of the YouTube video, the double rainbow and the guy crying. Is it something like that?
Someone just painted the rainbow onto the viewfinder of the telescope.
Though the landscapes were pretty, the subject matter of the landscapes is not material here.
Okay. Oh.
It's just a big sign that says, you have won $1 million. You look through at the exactly right place.
You look fabulous. That's all it says. You look great.
You are loved.
You are loved.
But just to be clear, it's not what they're looking at.
It's not the landscape they're looking at. It's
not the landscape
else
that they're looking at.
They actually just painted hot pepper sauce around the viewfinder and it just moves them to tears just immediately.
Ink on a viewfinder, solid gold.
They would look through the viewfinder and what they would see is viral videos of people being reunited with their pets after long periods of time.
Could it be that the landscape was spoiled somehow, or like they'd put trash out there as like an environmental message and it moved people to tears? No.
Is it wildlife? Is it maybe like it looks into a bald eagle nest or something?
Where my mind immediately goes is if it's not what they're looking at explicitly, that it's something to do with the viewfinder.
That is a reasonable path of inquiry.
Do you know, you ever been to one of those lookouts that where it's like Universal Studios and it's like part of the viewfinder is the thing in the foreground and it's like you what you're all right, I'm describing this terribly, but it's like there are these little like tourism things at Universal Studios and other theme parks where it's like a little rocket in the foreground. And then if you line up your camera just right, it'll look like you're witnessing a rocket launch, even though it's like a little foreground diorama. Is it something to do with like an optical illusion, Adam?
That's a fantastic question because the answer is complicated. Yes.
But they've painted something or added something into the viewfinder that tells someone something, delivers new stuff. They're actually looking at a computer monitor that is changing the picture somehow. I mean, it's a viral video, right? So they probably used actors to get the reactions. says the cynic.
We are so cynical.
I'm with you, Tom. Like,
I like that line. I mean, maybe it's like multimedia involved. Maybe there's music that moves people.
Love that.
Music is not involved in this, okay. But the viewer's lenses do have a special feature.
Is it? I'm remembering those viral videos of people putting on the color blindness glasses, the ones that shift the wavelengths of light a little. So if you're colorblind, you can actually start to see the difference between red and green or whichever color. It doesn't like repair color blindness, it just makes it much less obvious. And the tears running down their faces as they're seeing color. Like, did they put those lenses in there so you could see the fall colors, in quotes, properly or something like that?
That is precisely the answer, Tom. You've nailed it. 100%.
Tom, come on.
That's precisely, it.
It was purely off viral video and like tears in their eyes. And I just remembered those kind of images. Oh, I can see color. And like, it's kind of seeing color. It's more complicated than that. But I mean, if you surprise someone with that, like if you just looked at what looked like regular glass and you put them on and you have what feel like new colors to you. Oh, that's amazing.
A friend of mine actually was the head writer on The Big Bang Theory. And they did that for one of the writers in the writer's room. And he said, like, there's a before and an after. They were all changed by witnessing the experience.
So does that suggest that even for folks who are not colorblind, that looking through these lenses would enhance your experience of color?
No. One of the other hints that I had for you guys is that this only affects 5% of the people looking through the
lenses. Oh, I'd have got it off that. I would have got it straight off that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, most of the people affected by this are men, apparently.
Yep. Oh. Yep.
Nicely done, Tom. I love the fact that you got there from viral video because, of course, as a video producer, you are attuned to those things that have landed hard.
Too many times.
Wow. And, of course, my viral video interests are far too niche to be relevant here. I'm like, did they all look at Grimace Shake challenges?
One last thing to do then. At the top of the show, I asked which 1958 film should have been called Acrophobia. Before I give the audience the answer, does anyone want to take a quick guess at that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Adam and Ashley Adam's both going for it. Say it together. We'll see if you say the same thing.
Vertigo.
What? Vertigo. Which actually, Vertigo was shot, I'm not kidding, less than 1,000 feet from where I am sitting is the Mission Dolores, which is the staircase from Vertigo.
Yep. It is wrongly associated with fear of heights. Fear of heights is acrophobia. Vertigo is going dizzy. So, yes, congratulations to all our players. Thank you very much for being part of the show. Let's find out, where can people find out more about you? What's going on in your life? We'll start with Ashley.
At Smashley Hamer on all the socials. The podcast is Taboo Science, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Sam.
Sam Reich on socials and dropout.tv for all your streaming entertainment needs.
And Adam.
I am the real Adam Savage on most socials. I'm Don't Try This on Shitter, and I'm Tested on YouTube.
And if you want to know more about this show, you can do that at lateralcast.com. We are at lateralcast pretty much everywhere, and there are regular video highlights at youtube.com/lateralcast. Thank you very much to Adam Savage.
Hey, thank you for having me, Tom.
Sam Reich.
Thank you, Tom.
And Ashley Hamer.
Thank you so much.
I've been Tom Scott, and that's been Lateral.